Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and today I have with me Gil Asakawa. We're going to be talking about the value of social media and how it links into business development and business promotion. I met Gil at a speaker conference that was designed specifically to help improve speaking skills, and he shared with me his background. He's been working in online media since 1996. He managed the content for AOL and a succession of startups and news media companies, and he is currently the manager of the student media at the University of Colorado School of Journalism and Mass Communication Program. And he's also a consultant for AARP's Asian American Pacific Islander marketing team. He manages the social media outreach for this group and has also managed the DenverPost.com, serving as the manager of audience development for Media News Group and managing editor for Advanced Newspapers National Digital Operations. Gil has started his journalism career at Denver's alternative news weekly Westword and was the entertainment editor and art critic for the Colorado Springs Gazette. I have had some wonderful meals in Colorado Springs, great restaurants in that city. Gil, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pat. This is you should, next time you're back in Colorado Springs, make your way up to Denver because there are even more great restaurants in Denver and Boulder.
So. Excellent. Excellent. Gil, it sounds like you've made an interesting transition. How did you get involved in social media?
Well, the social media thing, you know, I started out as a music critic and a writer, and then this internet thing happened, and I was frankly one of the early adopters. I just thought this is going to change the future of media. I was working for a newspaper at the time, and I just saw the potential. So I started working for internet companies, you know, basically after AOL was my first one, but after that a lot of startups. And when I already embraced the digital stuff in the internet, you know, I started blogging pretty early. Because I know you believe in this, blogging is really important as a vehicle for communication and establishing your brand online. And then it was just kind of a really easy transition as these words social media started emerging for me to embrace that too. You know, like Facebook originally was just for college students. You had to have a university.edu email address to even register for Facebook. But after about a year and a half, when they opened it up to the general public, I was very interested in checking it out. So I've kind of made it a personal and professional mission to at least sign up for and check out every new thing that comes down the path. And I have lots and lots of accounts, but I really only use a few of them.
I remember reading a book about how Facebook started, and it was designed to help lonely male college students find girls. How far we've come from those days.
You put that so delicately. such a classy description. And I don't know if we have gone that far from those days. Facebook is much more kind of like that reflects, you know, the real world now in terms of the mix of people and what it's used for. But there are definitely things out there on the internet that are for lonely boys to look for girls.
Mm-hmm. I know that we have listeners now in more than 18 countries. And for those people who are out of the States, AARP stands for the American Association of Retired Persons or People. In order to be eligible for membership in AARP, you have to be 50 years old. For a lot of Americans, it's a wake-up call when they get that AARP card in the mail and they say, I'm not a retired person. All of a sudden, I'm feeling really old.
Well, and people start, they complain that they get them starting when they turn 40, but the reality is that you can be under 50 and join AARP, but it's designed, the organization is designed to help people 50 and over. And not just, I mean, when I say help, I think AARP has a reputation for mainly for two things. Discounts to restaurants like Denny's, which a lot of younger people wouldn't be interested in, and inexpensive health insurance. And it does do that, lots of discounts, discounts that I didn't even know about, I heard this weekend, that I should be using. But also, you know, they have health insurance, they have life insurance, but they also do a lot in Congress, in lobbying for issues that affect people who are 50 and over. And, you know, if you're 50, you're kind of far from being retired, especially today, you know, because baby boomers, if you were born in 1945 to 1964, maybe you're just now retiring, or maybe you have another 10 or 15 years before you retire. So AARP, really, the bulk of AARP's sweet spot, really, the people that I try to connect with on social media for Asian Americans, is baby boomers. And then, yes, we are very involved in senior care and elderly issues. Elder care, caregiving is a really big deal, and it'll continue to be a big deal that AARP has to advocate for and try to change laws so that caregivers, you know, family members can be considered caregivers, and caregivers can be considered to have access in hospitals, and all of these things that are kind of still uncharted territory.
The audience for legal nurse consultants, the people who have the authority to hire them, are typically people who would be in senior positions in law firms. They may be the senior partners, they may be the founders of the law firm. They ultimately are the people who would give the associates permission to bring in a legal nurse consultant to work on a case. The majority of them are in that baby boomer population. What generalizations can you make about the use of social media for people who would be in the baby boomer population?
I think that baby boomers as a group are a lot more tech savvy and opening to embracing technological change than certainly young people think. And you could almost see it in the way Facebook evolved. Facebook was originally just for college students. Then they allowed everybody else to join if they wanted. And then by the late 90s and early 2000s, let's say like 2005, the baby boomers were discovering Facebook, and all of a sudden you found high school reunion groups on Facebook, and for 10 years now I've heard younger people kind of grumble that Facebook's taken over and it's not really their thing anymore. They will use it, but there's an acknowledgement that baby boomers have totally embraced Facebook as a way to touch base with their networks of people that they do business with, that they socialize with, and also kind of bringing back and reconnecting with people from their past, whether it's a high school reunion group or a college group or previous jobs. And, you know, I think we all, I know that I certainly use Facebook that way, that I have all these different groups of people from throughout my professional career that I kind of keep in touch with through Facebook. Now, the main thing about, you know, using something like Facebook for communicating is that there are almost 2 billion people, more than 1.5 billion people on Facebook. And that means, you know, if you're looking for work, if you're looking for people, a person from your past or whatever, you go where the people are. And Facebook is where everybody is. So there are always new social media things coming up. And younger people right now tend to use other platforms among themselves, like Snapchat and whatnot. But Facebook is really has become a very reliable broadcasting medium, really, to reach a targeted group of people that you're interested in reaching.
What do you think are the social media platforms that are most useful for legal nurse consultants who are business owners looking to connect with attorneys?
I think Facebook is one, again, because of the simple mass of people on Facebook, and you can actually do some affordable, you know, fairly inexpensive advertising on Facebook. If you have a page for yourself, you can buy some advertising on Facebook that can be very targeted, and it'll just appear on pages for the people that you want to reach, like attorneys that deal in certain kinds of cases. So Facebook is really handy for that. Twitter, I think, is much more, it's really a popular medium for, obviously, some politicians, but also the news media has kind of learned to use Twitter as a shorthand way of communicating. It's almost like, you know, if you're a really good headline writer, you're really good on Twitter because you know how to convey the gist of a story in a very small chunk of words. But I don't know if Twitter is, they're trying to make it very business friendly. But I don't know right now if a lot of business and networking is conducted so much on Twitter as much as sharing of ideas and issues and links to stories. LinkedIn, of course, is the kind of the thought of as the business social media platform. And I get invitations to join some other ones, especially recently, there are some other ones that seem to be trying to kind of cut into LinkedIn and offer business networking. I have not checked those out. LinkedIn is a place that I have connected people in my network who see that I know somebody else, and they'll email me or connect with me on LinkedIn and say, can you connect me to introduce me to blah, blah, and I've done that. And I do know that Facebook is a very, very useful tool for kind of business intelligence, looking at people's profiles, seeing companies that people have worked for. And then if you're looking for work, LinkedIn seems to be the really successful platform for that.
Yes, it has proven to be quite useful in terms of the different levels of connections. I understand that Microsoft recently bought it and that there will be changes in some of the features that many of us have been able to use for free. They are pushing different platforms, different plans. There are four different plans with monthly costs that can go up to, right now, $64
a month.
And 99 cents a month, or maybe even more.
There's a hiring level for $100 a month. For HR professionals, mostly.
That's really extraordinary. I would say if you're used to the concept that you, up to this point, have been able to use LinkedIn without having to pay for a premium service. So that's been interesting to me to watch that transition, which is occurring now.
I think that's kind of a inevitable process as digital platforms mature, and LinkedIn actually, it's taken them a long time to get to this point where they're going to just slap on charges for things that they've offered for free. So, depending on which level you get, career, business, sales, or hiring, the most popular one is business for $47.99 a month. And each level gets you more access to things like advanced search filters, or you can save a note on somebody's profile, or save a note for yourself, you know, on somebody's profile if you want to remember something about them. Those things are available only on the more expensive levels.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of smart. As a consumer, I get irritated because it's a little bit of a, I don't want to say bait and switch, because LinkedIn's been around a long time. And so maybe they have a right to try to earn some more revenue. A lot of these companies have, frankly, never earned much revenue, like Twitter. Twitter is super famous and super, you know, common and much used, but they don't make that much money. They actually spend a lot of money doing what they do. So, you know, maybe these companies deserve to institute some fees, but it does seem pretty high. You know, if you're a company, you can afford $100 a month, I guess, for a LinkedIn account if you're a big corporation. But if you're a small business, even the $50 a month thing, I'd have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. We interrupt this show for a word from our sponsor. Do you remember this wording? Before we continue, I will share a resource that directly helps legal nurse consultants make sense of social media. I wrote a book specifically to address the power of social media in helping LNCs attract clients. You'll use it to discover how to work with the common social media platforms so you can decide where to invest your time. Social Media for Legal Professionals is an essential book for legal nurse consultants. What I cover in this book is first an introduction to social media, and then the whole concept behind relationship marketing, when people know, like, and trust you and start giving you work. There's a chapter on Facebook, a chapter on marketing with Twitter, a chapter on LinkedIn, a chapter on websites and blogs, a seventh chapter, which is on branding, and chapter 8 is on video marketing for legal professionals. You can get this book at a 25% discount by using the coupon code LISTENED in the shopping cart. And here's the link for ordering the book, http://lnc.tips/socialbook. That's http://lnc.tips/socialbook. Now back to our podcast. I'd like to ask you your thoughts about using social media as a way to build and nurture a community. And this is in distinct contrast to the way that some people use social media of sharing their content, but not necessarily building and nurturing a community. And I'm not saying one is good and one is bad. There are two distinct ways of utilizing social media. What approach do you think we should be considering as business owners?
I think all businesses, small businesses and large businesses, should see social media as an opportunity to build a community of like-minded consumers, clients, partners, peers, maybe even competitors, so that it's a place for a dialogue. And to do that, it has to be kind of a two-way street. There's a tendency, and I fall into this, where I tend to do so much social media sharing of content, articles, and, you know, my blog tends to focus on Asian American issues. So a lot of my social media tends to focus on Asian American issues. My work for AARP on Facebook and Twitter is about Asian American issues for 50 plus, and, you know, if you're younger too, or 50 plus people are interested in, you know, who wins the Grammys and whatnot. So I share a lot, and there's a tendency when you share a lot to just think of yourself as broadcasting, like you're just spitting out information to the ether, to the interwebs, as they're called. And I think it's actually more useful over time if you build a community, so they come to you, people come to you, come to your page to interact, to see what's the latest thing you've posted. So there are, and this is specifically for Facebook, although true for Twitter and LinkedIn too. And LinkedIn is a great place to share content, right, because you can post articles. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of my friends who are now posting articles, and I see them all the time, and a lot of them get me to click and read their, you know, thoughtful posts. You can do that on Facebook as well. And the keys, I think, to success building a community are, one, you have to be kind of not maybe prolific, but certainly regular. You can't just do one or two posts a week and check off the box and say, yeah, I do social media. You have to be there pretty consistently, I would say every day. Maybe not five things a day, although I've done that sometimes if there's a lot going on, but certainly one or two things a day. You should look on Facebook when you create a page. There's a very easy way to see what time of day people are coming to your page, what, you know, what kinds of things people are liking. So you should always pay attention to that and fine-tune the things that you share so that you're attracting the people that you want as your community. So you have to be prolific or regular posting things. You have to have content that matters to them, so that you should, you know, if you specialize in one kind of topic, be really good about covering that topic, but also branch out and cover things that, okay, so with AARP, like I said before, it's not just for older Asian Americans or Asian immigrants. I post a lot of things about Asia because we have had surveys that show that Asian Americans 50 plus travel a lot more than a typical American does. And they like to go to Europe, and they like to go to Asia, throughout Asia. So I'm always looking for interesting travel stories about Hong Kong or the Philippines or Japan or Vietnam. And I will post those on our Asian American community page for AARP. And those get, you know, some pretty good traction with our audience. And so you have to kind of have a mix of content that is focused, but also you're not afraid to include things that would be of interest to your community. I think you also have to be interactive. So when people post comments, I will often go in there and say, thanks for your comment, or, you know, respond another way. And if you have a page, you can answer as that page, if you have a business name on the page, or you can change that and you can post comments as yourself. And so there's a lot of ways to interact with people who are coming to your page. And if you interact and you're talking back to them, you have that two-way thing going, I think that's when the community starts to build. And then if you can afford to do some advertising, and this has worked out for the AARP community, Asian American community page, we did some advertising over November, December, and we're just doing some more just now on a series of videos we've posted. And that brings whole new audiences. And that's a great way to expand the people who like your page, your audience. And then once you do that, you kind of, again, you feel out what's working, what are they reading, what's interesting to them, and try to think like the people who you are trying to attract. And that's all, for me, it's always been, ever since the start of the internet age, it's been about connecting with people, finding like-minded people, convincing other people to believe in the things that you believe in, and then to interact. And that whole, you know, even with a newspaper website, that somebody posted a comment, even if they were really sometimes very angry or ugly comments, I would respond to them. It's really important to respond to the people who are interacting with you to build that sense of community.
Well, and that raises an interesting point that I have always been sensitive to and have had to control myself at times, and that is that there are politically divisive issues or topics that can be posted and discussed on Facebook, I think sometimes business owners forget that the way that they behave on Facebook will carry over into another part of their business. And I mean that in the negative sense, as you can tell.
Yes. And it's very important to keep that in mind. You know, there's a couple of fundamental rules about the internet in general, but social media especially. One is don't ever do or write or say something online that you wouldn't say to your grandmother. Just don't. Because that'll come back to bite you in the butt.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's, you know, you got to think, because the internet is worldwide. There might be aliens on other planets who are reading stuff that we're posting on the internet. So it's not only is it worldwide, it's also archivable. Somebody mm-hmm. will, if you say something that is controversial, or if you post, and I tell this to my college students all the time, you know, I say, don't post selfies of you drinking in a bar. You know, that's all, it's like, if you go on a trip, don't just show yourself in a pub, because that'll come back to haunt you, you know. People will look and search social media for your thoughts, for your past comments, and try to figure out who you are and the kind of music you like, all that stuff. So be a little cognizant that although even if you think the things you're posting are private, there are lots of ways for the things that you post online to get out to people in a way that will hurt you. So, and especially in if you're working already within a legal field, try to think a little bit like an attorney in terms of liability issues. You know, you don't want to do things or say things online that might come back to haunt you with liability. And politics is always something. It's the kind of thing you don't want to bring up at a Thanksgiving family dinner, unless you know that your family all agrees. Don't bring it up. You know, with the AARP's Asian American community, for instance, I'm very careful to post things about culture. I'll post things about like racism against Asians, but I will not post like partisan politics, because it's just not worth it.
You mentioned before about being interactive, and I notice a lot more Facebook Live videos being posted now. I'm connected to a lot of speakers, and it's quite natural and comfortable for speakers to pull out the camera and give a 5 or 10 minute video right from their cell phone, sharing some thoughts or an experience that they're having. Do you have any opinions about the use of Facebook Live as a business building tool?
I think Facebook Live and all video, I think video is really important to try and see if you can be successful with it. It has kind of technological challenges. Not everybody can shoot a nice video.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you could hold up your phone and take a video of a parade going by or something, it'll probably make people seasick if they watched it, because your hand is shaking so much. So you have to be a little cognizant of technique if you're shooting video. And I notice that a lot of professional speakers or workshop givers, creators, if they do a quick video, it's mounted on a tripod, and they're talking into the camera. The sound is fairly clear. And, you know, the number one rule for any video is that it's more important to make sure the sound is good than to worry about whether you look good or whether the video itself is well done. The sound has to be good before anything else can be successful. So there's technical things you need to worry about, but I can tell you that video is much more today the lingua franca, you know, the main content medium of the internet, you know, especially for millennials and younger boomers. I see people all the time in public watching video on their phones, my students don't have like cable TV in their apartments because they're all watching Hulu and Netflix on their computers. They don't need TVs.
Mm-hmm.
And so between that and like tablets, these have all made video kind of the really entertaining, really catchy. And if you'll notice, you know, Facebook Live is really a smart thing because it makes everybody a broadcaster, not just with text, not just with photos, but with video. If you're at a party, if you're at an event, people are shooting Facebook Live. And again, it can be very amateurish, but it can also be very well done. I know a lot of news organizations use Facebook Live now to cover events. I've used it for AARP when we've had like an event, and I've used Facebook Live as a way to shoot the event, and then it gets archived, so people can come back and watch it later. So I think it's handy. And if you also notice on Facebook or on a lot of other sites, because of people, for instance, when you're looking at your Facebook wall, you're scrolling down and you see a video that somebody, one of your friends posted, you stop on it for a second and the sound is turned off.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you purposely turn it on, and some news sites have video that automatically starts with volume, and I hate that. But in Facebook, the sound is turned off. People will watch it if it's a compelling video. People will especially watch it if it's a compelling video and you take the time to write subtitles of what's being said at the bottom of the screen, because then they can watch it without the sound, and it's much more captivating for their attention than just scrolling down your wall and seeing a snippet of a video and then you just keep scrolling. If you can actually read it and pay a little bit of attention to it, you might have a better chance of grabbing people's eyeballs.
Interesting thought. I never considered the subtitles portion of that.
Uh-huh. And the other kind of trick or tip that a lot of professionals know, but you know, amateurs might not, is that you think, you know, a 5-minute video is no problem, 10-minute video is no problem. Actually, a 3-minute video online on Facebook would be really long. And mm-hmm. we've just, AARP, we just posted some 3-minute videos, and they've done really well because they're so well done. It was for Valentine's Day. The shorter, the better. It's a mistake to think that you can put a video of an interviewer, even like a talking heads, if you're a workshop giver, a creator, or a nationally known speaker, if you're just looking into a camera and talking for 45 minutes, man, that gets boring. I constantly find myself, I might keep the sound on, but I'll start surfing other websites while I'm doing that, and then I'm not really paying attention to the speaker anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So shorter is better.
Well, Gil, our time has come to an end. It's been a very fast 30 minutes today. This has been Gil Asakawa. How can people find out more about you, Gil?
Well, I have a presence on Facebook. You can just search for Gil Asakawa, or you can Google my name, and I've written books about being Japanese American, wrote a book about toys of the baby boom era. So that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a blog called Nikkei View, and it's at www.nikkeiview.com. That's NIKKEIVIEW. And it's about Japan, being Japanese American, and Asian American issues.
Fabulous. And that is Gil Asakawa, Asakawa. Who's been speaking with us today about social media and how it impacts the development of our business. Thank you, Gil, for spending time with us today.
No, thank you, Pat.
And I appreciate everybody's comments and listening to the show. Stay tuned for next week. We'll have another interview back. And thanks so much for being a part of Legal Nurse Podcasts. Thanks for being a part of this program. Check out our online training and books at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Expand your LNC skills with our resources. Also, explore coaching with me at LNCAcademy.com to get more clients, make more money, and avoid expensive mistakes. And finally, join our continuing education program and get monthly trainings at LNCCEU.com. You'll get 2 online trainings each month designed to deepen your knowledge and skills. And look forward to having you tune into our programs again next week. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.